Hello, thank you for
Hello.
joining us. Hi, Dawn, how are you?
Good in yourself.
Doing great, doing great. I am Jacqueline Sanders Blackman, and this is Dawn Major. We're part of Technology Espresso and Partners, and we're trying to share our best knowledge and experience so that your journey in IT is you can avoid some of the bumps that we felt along the way. So we thank you for joining us. And a topic that right now is very relevant is talking about virtual office etiquette. And those of you who know myself, I've been in the IT industry about 30 years. So I've seen a lot of different iterations of even the virtual office experience. And I want to share that with you, especially some of my pre-COVID experience, and then comparing that to the COVID experience, because there's quite a difference, and not everybody has that much of experience to be able to know the original way that work from home worked versus the COVID. And maybe some of the things that we need to blend and mesh together as we move forward, as we are coming out of quarantine per se, but we still are enjoying and want to enjoy the idea of working from home. Now, Dawn, you come from a different perspective, and that's what I like about us bouncing off of each other. Same topic, but different experience. So share with everybody a little bit of your context around this.
Well, I truly did not have the opportunity or the advantage to experience working remotely prior to COVID. My time in the industry has mainly been within the office building. So that was the only experience I knew until the world came to a screeching halt 2020. So I definitely feel like I have a different experience and perspective on it. But still, some things that I'm seeing have been, kind of being taken advantage of with the advantage of being able to work from home. So I definitely feel this is needed, and I'm glad you're doing this.
Absolutely. And for those of you, just to give you a little further context around Don and I coached several teams within an organization that was going through, it was going through a transformation. And Don was on the first team, the pilot team that we did the agile conversion or the agile transformation with. And so Don's first experience and our exposure was working with co-located teams. That was at the heart of agile. And most of you know me from my agile coaching background. So when for so long that we were advocating teams being co-located, literally tearing down the cubicle wall so they were in this open space and so that there was a constant banter and chatting and eavesdropping that was going on, which is ideal for the role that Dawn played, which was the business analyst. Now, as Dawn said, and just when her team really, we really saw all the benefits of this pilot team being co-located and working together, just abruptly being sent home and now having to completely adjust how we connect. And there was probably a couple of, there was a week or two of deer in the headlights, but I do applaud because I did see the resiliency that the team quickly kind of just, this was self-organizing at its at best, kind of worked out the kinks and figured it out. What I fear sometimes is new people are coming along, they're coming in this environment, they didn't get to have that initial bond that the team had. And now realizing that these team members, we have to find a way for you to have that bonding experience in this virtual world. Because, I know people that have joined the team since 2020 in some organizations, and they've never seen their team face to face in any setting, and may not. And so that brings me to the ugly truth about meetings, and even the ugly truth about Zoom. If we are wanting to advocate and keeping an environment where we stay in our virtual spaces or our remote spaces, then the only tool that we have is leveraging technology, leveraging Zoom or whatever other web conferencing tool you use, with whatever their limitations are. But this is what we have to work with. So we've got to embrace it. And I'm all about, of course, you know, being creative. Yes. But Dawn, talk in your experience. Mm-hmm. What were maybe you observed, taking us back to 2020? What were some of the initial bumps and disconnects, and how did they kind of smooth out over time?
Well, as you spoke to the training that we went through, and it was, I mean, pretty much an intense boot camp for almost 3 months. And so we had truly learned how to depend on each other and work together and become cross-functional in ways that we hadn't prior to that training. And so we got to a point where, when everything came to a screeching halt and we were just in our own individual spaces and only on Zoom, we had to completely almost try to refine ways to work again, whether that was trying to figure out whether we're going to use Slack or which chat channel we were going to communicate on, how we were going to use a whiteboard, and even just not losing what we had learned in how to work, because we had finally got to a point where we were able to complete sprints within our 2 week time frame. And so we almost, you know, went immediately into, I think, leaning to your old ways of working, of just being independent and not going to your team member because they're no longer sitting right next to you. And so we just kind of had to regroup. I think that first sprint, we were completely thrown off. I think it took us about two sprints to try to find, to remember how we knew to work with each other. But it was very challenging. I have to be honest with you on that. It was very difficult. And I just wanted to share the point where you said, when new members come in, having had that training, it was already a little difficult if somebody would come in new, even when we were in the office, and try to, you know, create, you know, bring them into that space and give them the mindset in which we were working. And so doing it outside of the office was completely, completely different, because they hadn't been there. And so they didn't have that same chemistry. So trying to find, build chemistry through Zoom or Teams or whatever it is that you're using, it's like I said, it's a challenge.
Absolutely. And I think two points that you made is that, and something that I advocate with some coaching teams, is whenever you have any type of change, it takes 2 to 3 sprints to adjust. Whether the change is a new member joining, you all have to reconfigure your way of working to incorporate that person, to make them feel seen and heard. And so there's that adjustment period. The same occurred when the way you met, instead of in person, virtual, it was about a 3 week adjustment. And that's where coaches come in and help you with that. There's something else that you talked about, which was even the training itself. Us who do training, who do coaching, had to change even how we interact and help with those teams. I often, as a coach, I try not to be kind of always front and center. And so I have to also make sure, let's say when we're doing Zoom and I see a behavior, I don't want to interrupt the meeting or draw attention from the meeting or the facilitator in order for me to make a point. So I had to find subtle ways through the chat or private chat or direct messages. But even trying to observe and catch those behaviors, it's very different. Just like for those who are attending the virtual meetings, you lost the advantage of body language. And you know, even in this little picture, I'm gonna draw everyone's attention to this picture on this slide. There's some body language, even though they're little cartoon figures. We've got someone who's checked out, disconnected, someone that's just the Z. They just kind of, their eyes might be open, and we've probably been in meetings with people, their eyes are open, but they are not, you know, tuned
not
in
there.
And connected. You know, someone's checking emails. Someone may not be checking emails, but they're thinking about their email. So this, it's easy to get distracted. And we know this even when we had our face-to-face, but imagine this now when you're in a informal space. And this is leading into a lot of the different things we're going to hit on. We've got about, I counted them up, we've got about 15 points that we are going to talk about one by one. And I'm going to suggest, if you've got a piece of paper, a pen close to you, you know, have that by you. And as we hit each one of these points, I want you to kind of give yourself a score, either even if it's a thumbs up or a thumbs down or a thumb sideways. If you are a person that does, you know, you're doing things the right way or our recommended way, give yourself a thumbs up. But if you're a person that sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, or you kind of have found that you've slipped into a habit of one of our, what we call our anti-patterns, give yourself a thumb sideways. We're going to call that a half a point. But if you know,
work on that.
be honest, because I probably have a thumbs down or two from time to time. But identify those areas where maybe I haven't been the best virtual participant. And the thing that I want to emphasize is that, yeah, we're all human, and hey, we give everybody the benefit of the doubt. So we're judging, but we're doing it lightheartedly. But the reality is sometimes we have to do some self-correction. So, you know, we talk about empowerment. Some of that empowerment is, first of all, being willing to be honest with yourself about what you're contributing that might be an anti-pattern to the health of the group. So yes. This is kind of a self-evaluation. Don't go through this deck and think about, oh, I know someone on my team and who does this. Think about what are the things that you do. And then take it in context that Don and I, many, many times, we've been facilitators of meetings, and not just when one person is exhibiting an anti-pattern, but when you multiply that by all the different people in the room, all breaking and exhibiting these different anti-patterns, you make for an unproductive meeting. And even to some point, you're not being supportive of your facilitator. And even more important, sometimes you're just being disrespectful of both the facilitator that's brought people together with the best of intentions, but you have a role to play in making sure to help fulfill what we're trying to accomplish in those meetings. And that takes me to the last thing I wanna say on this slide. Well, the other part about the ugly truth about meetings, one of the things, the tips that I share with people is meetings is collaboration. Substitute the word meetings with collaboration. The ugly truth about collaboration, we have to have collaboration. People want to, and I hear this quite a bit, we have too many meetings. Do people ever say that on your team?
Yes.
We have too many meetings. The one thing that I'd like to correct, meetings are necessary. That's the truth. That's the ugly truth, is that organizations hire all of these talented individuals with the intent of them working together. You don't have an organization of 100, 500, 600 people so that you all can sit in your own spaces and individually just worry about your piece. You're working in a silo. They're looking for, and that word empowerment, team empowerment, is you work finding ways to work together. The organizations today and within Agile, they don't want to tell you how to work together. But I can tell you by the end of this day, what things that you do that contribute to the team not working and collaborating well. So rate yourself and resign yourself to what are those things you want to improve. And then share this with the rest of your team and make it a challenge for them to also reassess themselves and start with some corrective actions so that your meetings and collaboration, they're one and the same. When people say that we have too many meetings, I translate that we have too many unproductive meetings, but you can fix that. You can be part of the problem because of the anti-patterns, and you can be part of the solution. So let's adjust that language, that let's make sure that the meetings we do have are meaningful. And I promise you, the more productive meetings are, then the fewer you have to have. You're having so many meetings because people aren't coming, and you're gonna see this in our deck, they're not coming prepared, they're not participating. So and those things, and Dawn's nodding because she's also sometimes either a person facilitating or she's one of those people that's a participant trying to exercise the right way when everyone else around you is, they look like some of these people in this cartoon. So yes. any comments before we start taking them through each one of our anti-patterns?
No, I thought that was such a gold nugget to say. It's not just, replacing that work meeting with collaboration. I think that gives a completely different perspective on it. And it goes to show you truly how beneficial it could be if we really would collaborate and participate. To your point, we learned the benefit of that through your coaching whenever I was with my old team. So for me to now be a part of a crew who doesn't have that same collaboration, sometimes it's a little bit disheartening for me because I know the importance and I know the benefit of where it took a team that I was on before. So I know everything takes time and I hope to continue to promote what I gained through the coaching so that they can see the benefit too of really how helpful it makes everything. So that was all I had for that.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about, I threw out that term anti-patterns, and it still goes back to the team and finding that and smoothing out your ways of working. Remember and take into consideration that every member on your team, you all have your own way of working, learning, all different types of even just personal, preferences and quirks. And what we can't have is that I always think in terms of if it doesn't work for one of the team members, it doesn't work for the team. So it's not just, it's being on a team. There is, you guys know the old cliche, there's no I in team. It's you have to be selfless. You have to be able to look out for your other team members, give them the benefit of the doubt. And even if you're in your comfort zone, and that's why I said, when a new member comes in, all of a sudden, everybody needs to shift a little bit because there's a new person, there's a new consideration. So it does. And so a lot of people think if just one person comes, why can't they just go with the flow? Well, And Don, you may come from a perspective. You've seen a team that's operated differently. You're trying to come to a team and offer up some ideals and suggestions. And so we need that team, that new person that comes in, to have that mindset. Whatever they bring to the table, it can make us better. So let's be open to that and let's see where we need to shift and adjust. And that's just building it within your team culture, continuous learning, continuous growth.
Yes.
It's a evolution. It's a constant evolution, for everyone.
Yes.
So what's our first anti-pattern? Okay. Being on time. And I'm going to throw this one. I'm going to let Dawn start us off on being on time.
No, I mean, of course, it's very important, because in hearing constant complaints about so many meetings, well, if you're not on time, you're coming late, you're already throwing us off, because maybe you you didn't hear the first part of the information that was being stated. So then you might have a question because you missed, how we were starting off the conversation, or you only have four people out of the 10 that's supposed to be on the team. So you're not even getting accurate feedback. For me, this, rings like the bright light shines on for daily stand up. If you're not there while we're trying to give updates, then it's already throwing us off. And we, have just 30-minute windows. So we need everyone there right at the time that we start the meeting so we can end on time. You never know sometimes what's going to come up out of the conversation in order to, that's going to take a little bit more time to speak to. So can't stress enough the importance of being on time.
Absolutely. And I want to add a couple of practical tips. One of the reasons why people sometimes aren't on time, if you look at their calendar, they're in back-to-back meetings. Mm. So I know some companies really try to emphasize ending your previous meeting 5 minutes to, give everyone that breathing room. And even when we were in face-to-face, you needed to walk from one meeting room to the next meeting room. Well, yes. Sometimes we just need to get up, even in our virtual, get up out of our chairs, stretch, grab a cup of coffee. And I will say that I do think the other advantage, because we're going to talk about that, it's just as hard, and I may feel like I'm jumping ahead, but it's just as hard when people are getting, having disruptions. Sometimes there's something else going on, or needing to, in the middle of the meeting, get up or go off camera. It's because they haven't had a break. And it's actually in the virtual world, you're just sitting at that table. And, yeah. And I know, and even myself, at one point when I had my computer set up in my kitchen, I didn't even have a break to walk in the kitchen to grab a cup of coffee, and it's right there.
Right, right.
So those 5 minutes are important. So when you schedule a 60-minute meeting, really scheduling it for 55 minutes, and then know and make a note, and maybe have someone in the meeting that's a timekeeper that at the 50-minute mark says, okay, we need to wrap it up. And so mm-hmm. that you're really letting people go, and that it's not an offense. So if we start on time, but also end at that 55-minute mark, you're going to have a lot more success rate with people being able, because some of you have experiences where that first meeting started late, ended late, and the rest of your day was just, you never are able to recoup that. Right. But the other thing that I wanted to leave with you as a reminder is, again, every time you have a meeting that you don't get to, and this comes down to creating an agenda, time boxing what's on that agenda, what you're trying to accomplish within that, and taking everyone back to the agenda to keep you on track. Because the agenda also will show you, if we don't get this accomplished in this meeting, guess what? There's going to be another meeting. And mm-hmm. so
true.
You
true.
All, and this also gets your team members in tune with, look at the agenda, see if what's on the agenda is realistic, see if there's things that we can do before the meeting to prepare the meeting so that we can wrap what we're trying to accomplish up in that allotted time box. Otherwise, sometimes it's very clear that, yes, there's going to be a meeting after this and another meeting, another meeting. And sometimes you want to take a particular topic and make that time box sufficient enough to complete it, because back to our point about too many meetings, with us breaking those up into two and three separate meetings is the context switching. And so you end up, and Dawn, you probably experienced this, you try to start on time, maybe by the standards of the clock, the meeting has begun, but we can't start the topic because we got to refresh everybody's memory. We've got to get our mind, we've just ran from three or four other meetings, we come in there. So even when we talk about starting and being on time, it's starting on the new material at hand that we're trying to accomplish. And so all of that goes into facilitators taking into consideration how you're scheduling and create agendas. Agendas in my world are mandatory. It's so important for both the person who's hosting the meeting and the people who are participating. So I know that this seems like such a quick topic, but there's some layers to that you'll see impact some of the other things. So for that one, give yourself, even as a facilitator, a thumbs up, thumbs sideways, thumbs down about best practices for making sure your meetings start on time. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, so our number two anti-pattern, mute thyself. What do you want to say about that, Dawn?
Yes, yes, yes. You don't realize how important certain tools are until it comes to, screaming in the background or the trucks going past and you're sitting there in the middle trying to ask the question. And so I feel it's important to, when you first are getting ready to join the meeting, I know every tool is different, but I like to just come in and just mute myself initially. And then I'll unmute myself and say hello or whatever the flow is. But and just trying to be aware. Sometimes people I don't even believe are always paying attention and realize that they're unmuted. And it's just so much going on in the background. And it could be very distracting during the meeting.
Right, right. And if you notice, I was doing a demonstration. I went on mute and I had a sip of my water because, and that sometimes happens, is like, you hearing someone drinking, even breathing sometimes. There's been some very interesting mishaps and anti-patterns. But it, again, take into consideration, if you've got 10 people in the meeting, and it ends up being kind of a death by, there's a saying, death by 1,000 cuts. I'm going to say death by 1,000 distractions. So if there's one here and one there and one there, and then, people come back, oh, I'm sorry, I apologize. It's like, no, just go on mute, take care of what you need to take care of, and we'll keep rolling with it. That's so important too. I know sometimes people, sometimes the distraction is them being overly polite. Oh, I'm sorry, I've got to go do this and I'll be right. It's like, no, just put yourself on mute.
Yes.
Take care of it. We'll try to keep the distractions at a minimum. So,
and in that, I just want to add another point too, which I think is good. And I've learned too, is like you said, you don't always have to announce that you're getting ready to take care of something. Like you said, you put yourself on mute. You can turn your camera off, you step away, you come back, and we can see that you're back, or put in the chat, be right back. I feel like is very good.
Yes, that is, I love that. Okay, so have you found, are there times, are you consistent about putting yourself on mute, or do you need to work on that, or just be more self-aware, or give yourself a thumbs down? Our next one, finding a quiet space, and even something that you can kind of see, Dawn, again, we're living examples, our backgrounds. We spent some time before we jumped on today being aware of our backgrounds. Sometimes your background itself can be a distraction. One example that I had, I remember, it was a beautiful wall. One of my coworkers had spent time doing some artistic rendering on the wall in their office. And it was amazing. I got on a little bit earlier and we had a little time to banter, so we talked about the wall. But imagine it, I think there was probably 10 or 15 people that joined the call. 15 times we had comments, literally, it felt like 15, because every person that came on for the first time had to comment on the wall. So as beautiful as it was, which is cool. And I think, you know, there's a time, for example, if we were having a retrospective and it's a time for us to kind of share and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, everybody, let's see what your real background looks like. But for the purpose of just like the whole purpose of going into the office, you've got this professional atmosphere, just like you can kind of see behind Dawn, that gets you in that mindset, as well as the people around you in that mindset that we're here to focus on work. It's about focus. And again, you take that times 15 different distractions, whether it's a dog playing with their toy, or you know the kids playing, the kids watching TV in the background. Now, all of those were very real and things that we gave the benefit of the doubt during the quarantine, because we all found ourselves sent home. The kids didn't have daycare; they did not have school. There was, you know, so. That was something that was acceptable during quarantine, but now as we move to what we a long-term vision from working from home, I think that is important that what's going on in the background may not be a distraction to you. You may be able to tune it out, but you may not realize that other people, it's causing a distraction and it's keeping us from all focusing on a conversation. And you know, sometimes when people are going, and this happens in meetings in general, but it's like, well, what do you think, Dawn? And you're like, what was the question? Well, who knows what was distracting her at that moment? So let's take away as many distractions as possible. Make it quiet for yourself. Have a quiet zone, both quiet visually and as well as soundproof as much as possible. You know, in order for us to focus when we are trying to have these collaboration sessions. What's your thoughts, Dawn?
I agree, because I mean, there's been plenty of times where I have focused on a person's like TV that was behind them. And I mean, you're not trying to be distracted, but it's distracting. So you're like, what, like, you know, just seeing everything that's happening in their background, but still trying to be pay attention to what's happening in the meeting. And so, and I think it really does help whenever, like you stated, where if you have kind of that office background, then it just kind of helps keep you focused on, you know, what you're here to do.
Yeah, it's very much. Let's talk about coming prepared. Whenever you start, whenever I show a picture and you start laughing, I'm like, I want to hear. You must have a story. What comes to mind when you see come prepared?
I thought about whenever you brought up the example of how you constantly have to remind people why we're here and what we're, you know, kind of giving those refreshers. And so I do feel like agendas help with that, or, you know, just making sure that you send out notes after the meeting so you can refer back to that. And when you don't have those, you spend almost majority of your time trying to rediscuss what was already discussed, but a week has passed by. And so I just feel like we have to do a, you know, do a little better being prepared, especially in this virtual world.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that you said that's near and dear to my heart, meeting notes. I learned this in very early days of my business analysis, this quote that if you don't have meeting notes, the meeting never happened. Because everyone has amnesia from time to time. And you just need one person to have amnesia. It's like, well, I don't remember that. I don't remember that conclusion or that decision, or I don't even remember being assigned that action item. Then it's like, unless you have it recorded and we can play it back, then it never happened. And so it's so important, even just the basics, like the decisions made, the next steps, the action items, and when we're going to meet again, all of those things, that if we have those, and even they're attached to the next meeting invite, and everybody takes the time to look at those before going into the meetings. One of my practices is at the end of my day, whatever time that might be, at the end of my day, I always look at what's next on the calendar for the next morning. I mentally am getting myself prepared for what that next day is. And like everyone else, I usually have a calendar where, there's all of these boxes on top of each other. So that's even more so, because if I'm lucky to get those 5 minutes in between whatever things that I need to do to switch gears. But if the night before I've looked at my schedule, I can see some of the context switching that I'm going to have to do. I'm looking at who's in the meeting, who accepted the meeting, what was on the agenda, and getting myself for that context switching. So that type of even preparing the day before for what that next day looks like, it has been really helpful to me. That's something that is one of my best practices. So how are you, again, my thumbs up folks that are doing a little self-evaluation, are you that person that's in the meeting that's like, now what's the topic? What are we doing? And I really liked, I worked with a group that their culture was, if there was an agenda in the meeting, they would ping the facilitator and said, I'm not sure if I need to be at this meeting, I need the agenda. And so they had one group I know had a meeting rules basics, and it was every meeting needed to have that agenda. And that's so that participants can do their part and be prepared. So I like that as a best practice. Mm-hmm. Be seated and ready to learn. And then I've expanded to learn, to listen. They go hand in hand. Being ready, being prepared. And again, that is whatever context switching that you need to do, so that when you're going into the next meeting, you're coming in, you're seated. What I find is, and then I know this sounds, and some of these may even feel and sound obvious, but again, because I've observed different organizations and I watch how bad habits become the norm, and I've had companies that, as even you bring me in as a trainer, and I'm thinking, you're getting paid for this full hour. Now we're going to spend the first minute, and I've been told, that's just people come in late, so let's give them 5 minutes. Okay, you're taking 5 minutes off of that 60 minutes, and then if I want to be respectful and let people out early, we're squeezing us mm-hmm. down to 50 minutes, or now 45 minutes because I want to do a wrap up. And then when people come in, they want to say hello. And this is what's interesting: you come in late, and then you want to banter. And so people want to talk about their day, their backgrounds, what's going on over here, left, right. We got to go through that. And so literally I'm watching these 60 minute meetings almost kind of get squeezed into 30 minutes. And then, okay, if we got other distractions going on, or someone jumps in late and wants to catch up. Like I said, I had one group that I said, they're too polite. You come in 30 minutes late and still want to get on the mic and apologize for being late. you now just take it. So I'm gonna find there's a video that showed a meeting, and by the time everybody came on and did their apologies, the facilitator at the end says meeting's adjourned. It was just 30 minutes of everybody like, oh, sorry, I was late, I was running late, I was at another meeting, and you they did that back and forth for the whole duration of the 30 minutes in the. And it's the cutest video. I had to go find
funny.
That.
Oh,
but sometimes it feels that way. What's your thoughts?
Yes. Yes. No, I agree. I mean, everything that you stated, it's definitely like that, but I don't think I've ever looked at it as, you know, being seated and ready to learn. I mean, yeah. I know sometimes you are like flying to your seat, being ready, but I do feel it makes a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I will give you this tidbit. Even in our virtual world and our technology, I still have a notebook and I still write and take notes. And it's more for, that's my way of staying engaged. You know, just writing down keywords and it's more so, to be honest, I don't necessarily have to go back to that piece of paper. But it's giving me something, because some people are, and I learned this through my training and training techniques and how people learn. Some people are, they're called tactile learners. And so you might notice people that have to doodle. And so whatever it is that helps you connect the words that are coming through the microphone to help you kind of retain and stay engaged and not to drift, that's also something to take into consideration. Some tactile learners do have to have something to fidget with. And we know that they've been given the kids different things to fidget with when they're learning in class. So I associate that listen and learning together. What is it that you need to do to connect with the words? Because people are saying a lot of words, and after a while, you know, maybe even on this video, we start sounding like Charlie Brown's teacher, wah, wah, wah. And so what is it that you need to help you engage to stay in that kind of learning zone, that listening zone throughout a meeting, especially when we have these long days? I know it's tough. Now, raise your hand to talk. And there's, you know, first of all, it's the reason why I put this in here. There's a lot of teams that over time you get very comfortable with each other, and it's okay if, you know, everybody just kind of jumps in, especially depending on if it's a casual topic. But as a facilitator, one of the things that we know, and we talk about this in training, that because of different styles, you have your introvert and extrovert is two categories of style that work differently. And it really comes to light as a facilitator in meetings, where extroverts, they'll just kind of jump in and get their space and get a word in edgewise and overshadow anyone else. And I actually don't even see it as being offensive or trying to be offensive. It's natural for them. It's a communication. It's great. But for introverts, so us extroverts have to be respectful that as comfortable as we are with that, that's just as how uncomfortable that is for people who are introverts. They are going to wait until the floor is open. And the best way for that to happen is raising their hands. They're not going to shout, or what they're going to do is retreat and keep it to themselves. And they have very important things to say, because, and I love this quote, a fellow introvert said extrovert said that extroverts, their mouth starts moving and then they kind of think of what's going to come out. Whereas introverts first do a lot of synthesizing of the information and digesting the information. Then they really have well-formed things that they want to say, and then they'll speak. Well, my introverts, I often like to turn to them because they've been listening and can do a great recap or pull together all of the different things that have been thrown out and really say it in such a succinct way, or it puts just the right spin on it. But so as facilitators, even if we have a combination of open forum where we're talking, but then at some point, part of doing a round robin where you're calling each person by name, or do a timeout and say, okay, let's raise our hands. And because I think everybody's had time to kind of do some brainstorming, but now let's switch gears and let's raise our hand. And I'm going to start with the people that I haven't heard from yet. Those are different ways as a facilitator to be aware and to be to recognize those two different styles and how important both of them are to the best outcome in your meetings. Now that's me speaking from a facilitator perspective. Dawn, I want you to take the little sidebar over here, the participate and be present.
It's funny that you some of the things you said, because I know I'm an extrovert. So I often hear my mouth a lot more than I probably would even like to. But it's twofold. Like you said, sometimes it's best to take a step back. But then I am currently in an experience where there's just not enough participation. And so rather than to just have it completely stoned down, my heart goes out to the facilitator, and I just feel like, well, I want to at least respond and say thank you, or, the topics that you presented to us were great, or, I would suggest this, just to give some feedback, because otherwise just sitting there and no one saying anything, to me, it's not good. And so, like you said, it just shows, at least that we're present, and the information or the time that they took to present what they did, their work just wasn't for nothing.
And this is the one that I want to kind of drive the nail, I don't want to say into the coffin, but to some respects, if we aren't in the greater audience, doesn't find and doesn't extend themselves to show that they're present in mind and also to participate, this will drive everyone back into the office. Again, like you said, it feels like it's a very one-sided. And if I've invited you to a meeting, one of the thought processes that I try to implant, meetings are expensive. So just as much as you say we have too many meetings, do know that management feels too many meetings, that's very expensive. I have the people sitting in this room that we're paying all these salaries that they're not executing, because we got to talk about, decide, collaborate, come to a common understanding, so that when you do go back to working on your particular area, we know that it's going to come together in the end. There's no need for me to send everyone off and running if we don't have some type of plan, if we don't have synergy. So if we don't come out of these meetings, and these meetings aren't productive, like I talked about, then not only am I wasting the money to have you in the meeting, I'm now wasting the time that you go back to, through trial and error, build something that's not going to fit together, and I'm not going to get an end product. So I'm talking on behalf of enterprises and organizations and executives everywhere. I know a lot of employees get very emotional, especially right now when employers are beginning to talk more and more about people coming back into the office. And I've clearly seen a shift, because as I help people with their job searches and I look at job boards, it's very clear that more of the job for all of 2020, 2021, you would see remote opportunities. Now you're seeing COVID remote, or you're saying even the common term day one is hybrid. That's a very common term. Or, and what that means is if it's necessary, but you're coming back, but either if you take this job, we're making it very clear to you that you'll be doing, whether it's 2 days or you're eventually, once they feel like it's completely, we're out of any type of COVID threat, you'll be 100% back in the office. And right. unless you're ready to prove that we can be as engaged, be as productive, and have productive meetings in this virtual setting, then you all are helping to facilitate us, everyone returning back to work sooner versus later. So I just want to just drop that. The reason why we're going back to the office, if you're that person sitting there with your camera off, not raising your hand, not reacting to what is going on, even like you said, Dawn, if it's just affirmations, because this is, we were sitting here and when we're talking to each other, we're nodding. There's just an acknowledgement. That even helps someone. If you've ever been a facilitator, a lot of people that I feel sit on these calls with these dead, distracted impressions, as if, you know, you are bothering me.
Yes.
Switch roles just one time and you'll see what that does to the energy of the facilitator. Unless you've done this for a while and just completely can, sometimes it's painful having the cameras on because of how people are looking. That type of feedback, that energy, you're not gonna have that if we bring you in the office. And if you are, you're gonna be called into someone's corner office at some point because you've got to bring the energy when we're face to face. So do it when we're virtual. That's all I got to say on that.
Well, I think that was definitely like a ceremony.
I'm going to keep us moving. The next one, be kind and respectful. And that was tied into be nice to the facilitator.
Yes.
You know, what they do, it's not easy. So, you know, just be aware of that. Let's jump to no eating. What are your thoughts there, Dawn?
Well, I think it's important to establish if you are going to eat something that, you know, is this during a lunch meeting? I know you and I had kind of talked about that before, or, you know, already established, there's times where several of my team members, we've been in back-to-back meetings and it's 3 p.m. and we're just now getting an opportunity to maybe grab something to eat. And so we'll announce it like, hey, I haven't even had a chance to get lunch yet. I might want to grab something. Did you grab something too? So we could kind of collaborate and agree like, okay, so we're going to have a conversation while we're eating. Our less informal, I mean, it's kind of like more of the informal meeting of we're just going back and forth reviewing some details, but not like a major meeting, because it can be a major distraction. I mean, you're crunching and making all kinds of sounds, and definitely if you're on camera and someone's just like stuffing their face with a burger or something like that, can be a bit much.
No, I like the way you talked about it's to clarify, there are formal meetings and sometimes there are informal meetings. And even a facilitator, if you know, if you've booked something over a lunch hour, and because we often work in different time zones, you might, what's not your lunch time might be someone else's. But either let's in some way acknowledge that, and or even allow for time box. Let's say the first 15 minutes, everyone, if you want to go ahead and take a couple of bites of your food, this is if I scheduled it over a lunch hour. But what I would be looking for is let's take a couple of bites. And then at that 15 minute mark, because what it's saying to me, if you're stuffing your face with food, I'm probably not going to get a lot of dialogue out of you. This isn't going to be a conversation. So if we know, and if there's other people, different time zones that they're not eating, and we're here to have a conversation with full participation, let's time box it. That's one way to give and take on both sides. I like your idea. You know, let's turn the camera off, so that I know that you're in eating mode right now. And then after when you've taken a couple of bites, turn the camera back on. And at that point, we know that you're ready for dialogue. The other side of that as well is, that's why I kind of sometimes look at my camera, because sometimes I have to shift my lunch hour and know, hey, I'm gonna get a couple of bites between this meeting, because at this time, I'll either be talking, I'll be participating, I'll be presenting, I might be facilitating. So in our agility, personal agility too, it's very tricky, especially with different time zones, for people to lock into a lunch hour. There's gotta be that give and take. And I think I'm gonna talk about that a little bit more a little bit later, because of time zones. So along with our virtual world, I think we're seeing a lot of people being in different time zones. And so that needs to be considered in our etiquette. And I think it's on both sides. As individuals, you have to be able to give in and take. I literally see some people that start their morning late and then want to block off. I've literally seen where they then block off lunch. You're only available for 2 hours. Then you block off lunch the same time every day. And then I worked in an environment where people could schedule quiet time or focus time, they call it. And wow. So then they schedule the next, their afternoon for focus time. They only left us this 2 hour window. And that 2 hour window fell in the time of someone of the East Coast lunchtime, which was the other large group of the people that were in the meeting. It made it a scheduling nightmare. It actually just, quite honestly, I felt like was a anti-pattern and a really kind of a very selfish way of working. We eventually had to call it out.
Yeah, I think that one could even use its own slide, to be honest. Yeah. Scheduling, because I have truly a newfound respect of being aware of time and lunch time periods, because I for the most part, majority of my team is offshore. That's one. The company's headquarters is on Eastern Standard Time. And then where I, you know, live for the most part is Central Standard Time. So, of course, being an hour behind, everybody's lunch is at 12. And so I try to take lunch at 11 to be on their schedule. And just because majority of the time, I either need you before your lunch or after your lunch. That's going to be the heart of my meetings. And so you just got to adjust.
I absolutely. And for, you know, when we talk about, when I compare virtual to, you know, the in-person office environment, think about when lunchtime comes, there's usually conversations from the time you're departing to go to lunch. When you sit and they're sitting around the table and eating lunch, you're talking, you know, and again, we're in that work zone. So it's by default a working lunch, because, you know, there is a little of banter that we try to step away from work, but there is a lot of productivity. Even water cooler talk, walking down the hallway, we lose that when we go to a virtual environment. So we've got to realize there's ways that we've got to make that up. And that's some of the give and take. And being rigid isn't making for an environment that's going to have sustained virtual work environment. So know that you being rigid on top of this is actually working against the idea of us maintaining working from home. So keep that in mind. Okay, let's talk about, so that brings us to, because I know we've been going slide by slide, and just to kind of just wrap up, because I said there were 15 points, these other, and instead of just talking about anti-pattern, let's talk about how to succeed as a remote worker. And some of those things, starting with the picture on the left, thanks to Career Karma, want to acknowledge them. those are some of the things. And then the last few bullets, or any final words that were near and dear to Don and I as we wrap this whole thing up. But think about experimenting with your workplace and even thinking about what worked during quarantine, the exceptions that we made. If we're looking at long-term working from home, really carving out a true permanent workspace, and I would encourage with the door. That's the number one to avoid some of those interruptions. Creating boundaries is number two. What that means is when that door is shut. Now, if you don't have a physical door, then there needs to be, there might be a sign that for the kids, for those around in the household, hey, I'm on air. And especially when we talked about the formal meetings, especially, but in general, setting up rules and boundaries in the household, and if when possible, having that door. Some people I've even seen, even in, you know, have a piece of tape, something that says, hey, when the tape is up, that means be careful, reduce the distractions. Any comments there, Don?
Oh, I've not heard of, I didn't even think of some of those. And so I wanted to go back to a point that you made, but I'll wait to the end about that water cooler talk. But yes, I know something that I try to practice is my son gets off the bus around 3:30. So I try to not actually have a meeting during that time. And I've kind of informed most of my team. Sometimes it's inevitable, but I just mute, go off screen, and kind of, direct him to where he needs to go so it's not interrupted. And because I've communicated that, usually one of my coworkers will kind of jump in and help me facilitate or continue to take notes. So we kind of got a little team effort there, but.
I like that. I like that a lot. Three, which we talked about, you see, preparing for the meeting. I'm not the only one that, look at the even review the night before. Four, create accountability for yourself. So when I'm preparing or looking at the day ahead, think about, do I need to read something before that meeting? Do I need to have people know I'm notorious for having a lot of tabs open. A lot of times I've opened up the tabs or clicked on if there was material sent out to have those. Again, kind of getting myself in a position that, yes, I may have to go quickly from one meeting to the next, but I want to give each meeting, I want to be respectful and give each meeting my full attention as quickly and to be able to pivot quickly. And so taking ownership for that. Number five, being visible at work. And we talked about everything from having your camera on and also the statuses. I really like, we use Slack and there's some other forms to let people know when my light is on, when I'm available. But I will also coincide that with there are some focus times that you also need to carve out. And I'm gonna, for both people who are attending back to back, but also for facilitators, a lot of times when I have a meeting, and I talked about having meeting, getting those meeting notes out, if I've had especially a long workshop where I know there's a lot of content, I'll carve out 30 minutes after that workshop. That's gonna be my focus time to go ahead and collect and organize the notes and make sure that those notes get out while information is still fresh. So that's another little tip, to especially for facilitators. Six, communicate clearly and effectively. And one of the things that I will say is that goes back to being aware that other people learn and absorb information differently. And so don't get frustrated if you feel like, oh, I said that, but I'm not being heard. I, especially in the world of business analysis, I know a lot of things you need, you have visual learners, so you need to present a visual, a picture, some way of laying that out. The tools are even getting better. There are things like the whiteboard, and there's things, I'm a big user of Mural or Parable, different things. And even facilitators, if you feel like the audience isn't getting it or isn't responding, or let's just be honest, falling asleep on you, change your tools and your techniques. Be careful that it's not all a slide presentation, that there's some interactive, or you're pausing. You notice how I gave the our audience today an assignment. I gave them the thumbs up, thumbs sideways, thumbs down. That was one way of to get them engaged. Number seven here is work on your health. Work on your health. Sometimes your brain can't work if you're not in a healthy position. And by health, that also includes making sure you're getting the proper amount of sleep. In our world of virtual, where we are sometimes sitting in the same place in front of the camera, going from meeting to meeting, making sure you're getting up, making sure you're stretching, and making sure that you're getting some type of physical activity outside of work. Invest in that, and you'll find that your concentration and your engagement will go a lot further. Number eight, clear responsibilities. Sometimes even as facilitators, delegate to some of the members that are in participants. Ask people to take notes. Ask them to be your timekeeper. Ask them to do the slide while you're talking. And then also, number eight, when we conclude the meeting, make sure that it's clear what are the next steps and what are people responsible for, as well as if they're responsible prior to future meetings, what they need to do so that they are clearly prepared. Number nine, feedback. Talking to the team to see what can we do to bring life or make the meetings more engaging and more productive. Don't just allow people to complain about the meetings. With each complaint, come with a suggestion. And one of my examples, I shared this with Dawn earlier, is retrospectives. Any type of ceremony within Agile can get mundane after a while. Daily stand-ups. Well, rotate them. Have different people facilitate them and let them put their own spin on the retrospective or on the stand-up. Maybe they own it for a week. And I also promise you, people will have a different appreciation if they find themselves in the facilitator's seat from time to time. So find a way to make sure that the team, don't just talk with them, make them a part of the solution. And then 10, take time to socialize. And that was one thing that I joked about earlier, people coming in and wanting to do that banter at the beginning of the meeting. Some meetings will allow themselves, but if I know I've got 60 minutes worth of material and I want to allow everyone to do just an informal icebreaker, then I know that I might make that meeting an hour and 15 minutes. I might give ourselves that extra lead way. Because we again, in the virtual world, we don't have that luxury of banter. Maybe the people that you specifically are close to, but imagine new people who join the team and they haven't had that face-to-face connection, they need that extra banter. And so finding that time and or setting aside, I worked with recently on one of my engagements. One of the feedback we got from the team is that every time they met with a particular, it was their director, it was always business, and either they kind of felt like sometimes it was telling them something they needed to do wrong or some change that was coming. And they wanted to see a different side and connect with their director. And so we set up monthly a meeting about nothing. And that's what we called it. So it was a 30-minute meeting, and it might have a theme, it might not. And they were always the energy and the air, it just kind of just opened up the air. And it was really more the director listening and doing very little talking, but really getting to know them. And it really was to not talk about work. And sometimes we've got to be intentional about this in our new virtual world. So I really like number 10, and it's probably a bit of a surprise, you know, but if we can't use that time during our meetings, let's make a meeting about nothing. But Dawn, I'm going to let you kind of take home, throw in your comments, and if there's any last comments you have on our final bullets on the right.
Well, number 10 did surprise me. So I was curious on, you know, what they meant by that, but I thought that was an excellent point and kind of a really cool idea, which you just shared about the meeting about nothing. Because I think it gives you that time, like you said, to get to know your coworkers in a way that you don't necessarily get to know them, especially if you've not ever had an opportunity to work with them face to face, which is the position I'm in currently. But I thought the point you had brought up earlier about the water cooler talk and talking while you're on your way to the next meeting, that's what I did all the time. I mean, we would come out as a group out of that meeting, and as we're kind of running literally almost to the next meeting, we're talking about, well, what did you think about that? Well, that was a valid point. And, oh, I think we need to talk, you know, we need to make that point to this person over here. But those ideas were still being shared, and we were still having those conversations, and you lose all that now. You don't necessarily have that in between time. You just, you know, you're into the next meeting. And so you don't even work and have those constant flowing conversations as much while you're sitting next to someone while working. And so you're spitting ideas out versus when we're ending that call, we're just kind of working on our own a little bit more in that silo. So I thought those were really, really good points to bring up. And I had never even thought about them until you just had mentioned it now. So
awesome. Well, and the last tidbit that I'll leave you with, there's some those bullets on the right just kind of reinforce. I think we've kind of peppered those throughout the mm-hmm. presentation, but again, give yourself the thumbs up, thumb sideways for each one of those bullets, and then kind of when all said and done, reflect and see where there's room and improvement. And even take this to your team and take the 15 bullets and have as a team everyone evaluate themselves, and it's a great retrospective exercise, and for everyone to pick, because there's always room for improvement. What's the one thing that you're going to do to help improve the team health? And that's the only way you'll have a healthy team, agile or otherwise, is if everyone's intentional and everybody does their part. And the last one that I'd like to say and also invite you is disagreeing politely. And Don, I'm gonna task us with a takeaway that we do a whole series on disagreeing politely, how to, when you have different opinions and you want all those voices to be heard, but at some point you've got to find that alignment so that you don't find yourself in analysis paralysis, and doing that politely. And even sometimes, you know, making sure that you're very intentional, because again, in the virtual world, something said, especially in text or in written form, or even how it's said, you know, that comes across, it's so easy to be misinterpreted or to offend Yes. people. And so let's take that as a offline. And then lastly, I want to ask everyone, please feel free to like and share today's video, and also mm-hmm. give us feedback, but do it nicely. So exercise.
Disagree politely.
Yeah, do it politely. Maybe you don't agree with something that we said, and we would like to hear from you. We would like, you know, you to share it. This will be posted on YouTube, so you can share it with us that way. You can come visit us, or if you just want to connect with us one-on-one, again, I'm Jacqueline Sanders Blackman, and you can, especially on LinkedIn, find me as Jacqueline 007 and send me a direct message. And again, my lovely and wonderful partner here, Dawn Major. You can find her on LinkedIn, Dawn03, and send her a direct message that way. I would say we're partners in Agile. And I really enjoyed today's session, Dawn. I think that I know that there's some nuggets embedded in this, and it was great sharing this topic with you.
I agree. Thank you so much. And you've actually gave me some takeaways from this presentation for me to utilize and take back to my team. So some valuable retrospectives, I believe, coming my team's way. And I'm sure I'll be able to share. So I appreciate being able to be your partner on this. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that's all for this episode. And until we meet again. Thank you.
Bye.